Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. And today we're going to share one of the biggest upsets in history. It remains, over 60 years later, the only time the USA has ever won the 10,000 meter in the Olympics. And we'll even have the call for you. And then I'm going to share my thoughts on how we deal with pain, whether short-term or long-term. And joining me for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How's your week been?
Man, we got a deluge, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, I went for a run. Darren and I met for a run. When all that flooding in Chattanooga was happening, we were running.
Yeah, 6 inches in a few hours.
Yes. I mean, the interstate was literally underwater.
I-24.
Yeah.
The split.
Cars just floating.
Yeah.
It was
crazy.
So bad. Yes. I've never seen Chattanooga flood like that before.
Yeah.
There's parts of Chattanooga around the creeks and stuff. But
yeah, I think whatever period of time that 6 inches came down, it beat the record. The record was 2 inches in that span of time, whatever it was, and they got 6 inches.
Wow.
Yeah.
No wonder it happened.
Yeah, it's soggy around here for sure.
Yeah. Well, I like it though. I like the rain. It's all good. Right.
So what's your favorite season? Never ask you that.
I think probably fall.
Yeah,
I enjoy the fall.
Yeah.
It's hard not to enjoy the fall.
Yeah, my mom sent me a picture yesterday. You know, my late stepfather, Barry, his favorite thing, you knew it was fall when he put the candy corn on the table at their house. And she sent me a picture yesterday. She said Poppy would be proud. She had the candy corn out. So, yeah, I'm not into the pumpkin stuff. You know, everything's pumpkin spice nowadays. But I love fall because it's kind of the doors opening to Christmas decorations. You know, for me, that's what it's all about is
Got
to get that Christmas tree up.
That's right.
I'm shooting for sometime in September this year.
Well, our post of the week comes from Elizabeth Cormack. She said, got it done before the sun went down. Felt great with cadence drills and 180 beats per minute music to pace, all progressively faster miles. This is something we've talked a lot on here about the cadence and what your cadence should be and all of that. And I usually bring up the metronome and the idea of using a metronome to help increase your cadence or shorten your stride.
Mm-hmm.
But this is good too. To find some music, because you can do that. You can say, I want 170 beats per minute music, and it'll pull that up, and you can run, and all you got to do is just follow the music.
Yeah.
And for some people, that's preferable, I guess, to a metronome. So it's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Why is it, though? I've questioned this before. I don't know that I've ever looked it up. Why is it for running, it's like 180 beats per minute, but for cycling, it's 90 beats per minute? It's like they only count 1 foot in cycling. They count both feet for running. But it's actually the same. The cadence is the same for cycling and run. The optimal cadence, I say. But I've never understood why. We always talk about a different cyclist are. I guess they just had to be different in this area too.
That may be it.
But if you've never thought about music being, and I'm forgetting, is it on Spotify? You can look it up by beats.
I know Spotify you can.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can on like Apple Music or probably, I would imagine there's several platforms.
You know, if you've ever taken a CPR class, they talk about doing this with staying alive. That's the rhythm by which you should be doing chest compressions. And I think that's like 100 beats per minute or something.
Is that right?
Like that.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah, music can be used for a lot of things.
For sure.
I was back in, you know, when I was running marathons, you know, fairly regularly, I love Southern gospel music. And I'll never forget, I was running with somebody one day and I had my phone. It's when I just let it play out of the speaker while I was running. And they're like, how in the world do you run? Because it's like 50 beats per minute. I mean, it's super slow. But I figured out how to do it. I liked it. But yeah, I mean, you can find music for whatever cadence you want.
Yeah. I don't tend to change my pace based on the music. Yeah. So I don't know that it would be effective for me.
But when you find the music, if a song comes on that is your cadence, you know it.
Yeah.
Because you find yourself, you're like, man, this feels good. You know.
There's a particular podcaster that I listen to, and his introduction music is the cadence that I normally run when I'm run on an easy run. And every time I find myself, because it's one of those things that the beat's real heavy.
Almost like you're dancing.
Yeah.
When that comes in. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Our run of the week comes from Chris King. Yesterday was the final 5K of the LRC Summer Watermelon Series. After the three race series, I finished second in my age group. Now it is time for the half marathon training for the St. Pete Run Fest in November. I will run the ways of your commandments, for you will enlarge my heart. That's Psalm 119:32. Congratulations to Chris.
Isn't it cool how he's another one of those household names?
He is.
It's like I've met Chris a few times, but such a cool thing about this ministry is just all the friendships that have been formed through the years, and Chris is one of those.
Yeah,
it's a great job, Chris.
Yep. You know him when you see him.
Yeah.
I love to do this race series thing. You know, Chattanooga has a race series thing where there's actually awards for the, just kind of like this one that he did. It's called the Battle for Chattanooga. And there's three races in Chattanooga that are kind of centered around battles of Chattanooga. The first one's the Chattanooga, Chickamauga Chase, rather. Mm-hmm. Which is at the battlefield, and it's all the awards are usually like, the award may be like a bayonet for the winner or something. It's really cool stuff. Then the Missionary Ridge Race, which starts and finishes at a reservation there at the top of Missionary Ridge, and it's a hilly race. That is a tough race, but it's a 4.7-mile race. And then there's the battlefield marathon again, at the Chickamauga Park, but it's a marathon. And they take all those and they put them together and they decide a winner based on that. I won that one year.
Really?
The Battle for Chattanooga. I think it's the only year I ever ran all three.
So you ran all three and won the series. Yeah. I've run all three of those races. I don't know that I've run them all in the same year. And it's weird. I'm just putting two and two together. I just did a thing in Gettysburg a few weeks ago, a leadership conference, and one of the famous battles at Gettysburg was the Battle for Missionary Ridge.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I guess everywhere the Civil War fought, they had a
Missionary Ridge. I guess so. And I've seen several posts here about people going back to St. Pete this year. So last year we had a pretty good group there, and apparently folks liked it because a lot of them are going back. So that's cool. Our trivia question from last week said, we have talked about the coldest and hottest marathons. We've talked about the highest marathon. But what is the lowest marathon in the world as measured from ground level? This comes from Mark Dredge. He tells a story about this new marathon. It's for the first time. It's 3,675 feet underground in Sweden. It's the world's deepest marathon. There's 60 runners that are going to take this on in October this year. The things you need to know about it: the world's deepest marathon will take place inside Boliden's Garpenberg zinc mine on October 25. The run is 3,675 feet underground. 60 runners from around the world run the world's deepest marathon. 3D route mapping was used to create the route for the run. Runners will face temperatures of 86 degrees in total silence and will be running in total darkness, wearing headlamps for light. The runners will be equipped with helmets and personal protective equipment and will have access to rescue chambers as part of the strict safety measures to protect runners in this unique environment. And they're trying to raise $1 million for a charity to do this. And I think it's pretty cool. No marathon has ever been run this far underground. It's definitely an extreme environment. It's a wet environment, so it's going to be really, really humid down there. 86 degrees is obviously not cool. It'll be pretty warm. It's organized by a company, a high-tech metals company, and they're trying to kind of draw they're trying to draw awareness to the fact that mines aren't as dangerous as they once were. And I think that's pretty cool. And apparently Bear Grylls is kind of part of this whole thing. I love Bear Grylls. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever watched him, but he's a fun guy to watch. Oh, yeah. And such a great guy. He says running a marathon is tough, but doing it 1,120 meters below sea level in total silence and darkness will push participants to their limits. It's a celebration of human resilience and a statement on the transformation of the mining industry. So pretty cool thing. This is something that's interesting, though. It says, will it be easier to run underground? At lower altitudes, there will be higher air pressure, which theoretically means more oxygen, potentially 10 times more than at sea level, which could improve endurance performance. However, there's more air density at that altitude, meaning more air resistance, which could slow runners down. But with high temperatures and high humidity, plus the challenging dark conditions, we have no idea what the underfoot conditions will be. This will definitely not be an easy run, and it's not going to be fun for those chasing a new personal best. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I got two things. One, the 80-something degrees caught my eye because I was thinking that temperatures underground range between 50 and 60 degrees. For some reason.
That's a good point.
So I wonder what is it there about those zinc mines that make it hotter? Because, you know, I've camped out like in caves before when I was young, and it's cold even during the middle of the summer. The other thing is, I don't think, take all things considered that you just said, I think even in the perfect conditions, I don't think it would be faster.
I agree with you.
And here's my hypothesis is, chances are it's going to be like corridors. Well, if you've ever run like down a hallway of the airport, you've run in the airport, you feel like you're running way faster than you actually are because the walls are kind of closed in and you're zooming by. You just feel super fast. And so I think that would affect you negatively because you're not running as fast as you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that would be true or not, but that's my hypothesis.
I think that applies to running in the dark as well.
True.
When you run in the dark, you feel like you're running faster than you actually are.
Yeah.
And so those two things combined, I think it's going to feel like you're running faster than you are. And yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's true.
So does running, let's debate this, because we used to do this when we were training for the Blue Ridge Relay. We would run Mount Sinai once a week. And when we ran it before daylight, it felt easier than during the day. And we thought it's because you just couldn't see what still remains in front of you because it's a mile and a half up a mountain.
Yeah. But you ran it slower, probably.
I don't know that we did. I think all things being equal, it just felt easier because when you're running that mountain, gosh, you look ahead of you and you're like, seriously?
Yeah.
Do we got that far to go still?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
it's all mind tricks.
Yeah.
It's all in the head.
We'll have to follow up on this after it happens.
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
We're back. And what about stories? We need more stories. So somebody, if you're out there right now and you're thinking, you know, I've had this thing happen while I was out running one day, and it really reminded me of something that is just, it's a God thing. And you haven't told that story to everybody on this podcast yet. I don't know why you're waiting, because we need to hear that story.
Well, and also, you know, we've got a story being written right now. We had a somebody reach out and give us their story before Couch to Marathon that's going on right now. And we're going to get a follow-up to that after. But we're also about to start the Couch. We got people signing up for the Couch to Marathon, which starts at the end of September.
Yeah.
For the Cannonball. So if you're signed up for that and you've never run a marathon, or you're not signed up for it and you're thinking about it, again, these are going to be some pretty cool stories to contrast the before and after. So if that's you, if you're thinking about signing up for the Couch to Marathon starting in September or in January, we're doing it all again in January, go ahead and reach out to us now and get us your story.
That would be
great. We're going to talk about stories a little more here in just a few minutes, but they're so important.
That would be great. Well, this comes from the New York Times. Japanese walking is a fitness trend worth trying. The workout is simple, and its health benefits are backed by nearly 20 years of research. Going for a walk is one of the simplest workouts, but it can have powerful health impacts. Walking has been linked to improved mental and cardiovascular health and can be effective for managing back pain. But not all walking is equally effective. A method nicknamed Japanese walking on social media, also known as interval walking training or IWT, it seems to offer greater advantages than a simple stroll or even than walking at a moderate pace for 8,000 or more steps a day. This strategy was first introduced 2 decades ago by a guy named Hiroshi Nose, an exercise physiologist in Japan. And this country has one of the oldest populations. And so I thought, what can we do to keep people fit? And so this guy came up with this idea to do interval type training. And this has now become popular on TikTok apparently recently.
Really?
I'm not a big TikTok guy, but apparently this has become big on TikTok. The benefits of this interval walking. So what is interval walking? Well, it's exactly what our plans are and what you did a few years ago.
Yeah.
It is you walk nice.
I think they stole this idea from us. I know they said they've been doing it for 20 years, but
you may be right.
Because I had never heard of it when we did it. Had you?
I had not. No. But now, according to these people in Japan, they've been talking about this for a long time. But it makes it more approachable for a lot of people.
Yeah, it does.
And it is a great form of training. So the bottom line is you stroll for part of your walk, and maybe you stroll for 3 minutes, and then you walk really vigorously for 3 minutes, and you alternate that.
Well, the funny thing is they even describe it almost exactly how we describe it. when we say walk and walk hard, and I always say, you know, that's going from aerobic to anaerobic, and the anaerobic is where you go from breathing hard to a little bit out of control. They almost describe it the same way. So
yeah.
that kind of caught my eye as well.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. In their studies, volunteers completed at least 30 minutes of interval walking 4 times a week. So that's kind of the standard for what we talk about as far as aerobic type exercise.
Sure.
And this does a lot of good. So if you're a walker and you're listening to this, this is a way to get you more fit through walking. A lot of times, I see a lot of people out there walking, and usually people are one of two types of walker. They're either a stroller.
Mm-hmm.
They're just...
There's nothing wrong with that.
And that's... Listen, it's way better than being on the couch, for sure. Nothing wrong with that. But... or you got somebody out there who you can see they're really focused and they're walking as hard as they can. But this alternating... The really hard with the easier stuff is actually better for you, because you wind up running being a little more intense when you're going on the intense part, and then that rest allows you to be more intense. And
I'm also learning, this is kind of another layer to this onion that I feel like we've been building, is, you know, I've been rucking now, and I ruck 3 days a week, and it's almost doing the same thing. I'm still walking, but I'm throwing weight on my back, so I'm not going faster necessarily, but I'm carrying more weight. And I feel like it's serving the same purpose as the interval walking. But I'm going to say, I mean, the verdict's still out. I'm going to say it's almost more effective than just the walking fast, because you're doing it under a load. So the muscle building component is there, which is not there near as much when you're just walking fast. You're still getting the cardio side of it, which is great, but the rucking adds another layer to the strength part that you even don't get really in running as much. And so, I don't know. I'm, I don't know where this whole rucking thing's going to go. I've kind of got an idea in my head what I might try, but I don't know. I guess I'm just a human guinea pig for upward running.
That's what it seems
like.
That's
what I feel like the past few years. But it's been fun. I love it.
That's good. Yeah. It's neat to try new things for sure. Well, the story of Billy Mills is a great story. And this is his story from a faith perspective. This is called The Big Upset. Billy Mills won the gold medal in the men's 10,000-meter race at the 1964 Tokyo Olympics in a stunning upset, achieving one of the greatest moments in Olympic history. His victory was not only athletic, but deeply spiritual, driven by his Christian faith and the hope and healing it gave him. Billy Mills was born on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe. Orphaned by age 12, he faced poverty, loss, and the challenges of discrimination. These childhood wounds left him feeling broken, but he kept dreaming. His father once told him, you have broken wings, and it takes a dream to heal broken wings. And before you can get to the dream, you have to have hope. So Billy nurtured hope in his heart, believing that God had a purpose in his life. Excelling in track at Haskell Institute, Mills earned a scholarship to the University of Kansas, becoming three-time All-American in cross country. After college, he joined the United States Marine Corps, running for their track team. By 1964, he was a Marine lieutenant in Tokyo, ready to compete in the Olympics. Yet, he was an outsider. No American had ever won the Olympic 10,000 meters. His best times were far slower than those of the favorites, world record holder Ron Clark and Mohammed Gamoudi. But Mills believed God and his native heritage gave him gifts, talent, perseverance, and faith. In the days leading up to the race, Mills felt pressure from coaches to rest, but his training had always been about endurance and resilience. Instead of tapering, he went for a 25-mile run only 4 days before the main event. His preparation was not just physical, but spiritual. Mills wrote in his journal, "The Creator has given me the ability. The rest is up to me. Believe, 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 believe." Faith was more than belief. It was a core of his Olympic pursuit, the source of confidence and clarity. The 10,000-meter final unfolded dramatically. Mills stayed with the leaders lap after lap. On the final lap, the runners jostled, elbowed, and surged. Clark boxed Mills out, and Gamoudi sprinted past, taking the lead. Mills seemed too far back, almost finished. But in that moment, he drew on everything, his training, his spiritual heritage, and his faith in God. As Mills rounded the last curve, a powerful memory rushed to him, his father's words and the image of an eagle signifying God's promise of renewed strength from Isaiah 40:31. "But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint." With one final explosive sprint, Mills moved out to lane 4, passed Gamoudi and Clark, and crossed the finish line to win gold in an Olympic record, a time almost 50 seconds faster than his previous best. Mills himself said he felt relaxed in that last kick, as if God's peace was with him. After the race, a Japanese reporter, astonished, asked simply, "Who are you?" America had its answer. A humble champion deeply shaped by Christian faith. For Mills, winning wasn't just a triumph for himself, but a moment to glorify God and share hope with others. After the Olympics, Mills dedicated his life to serving others, co-founding Running Strong for American Indian Youth. He gave speeches about hope, healing, and the power of dreams. His activism was rooted in faith and compassion for those suffering poverty and dislocation. Mills openly spoke of Jesus Christ as his Savior. He described how faith, prayer, and Scripture sustained him throughout darkness and disappointment. At his lowest, Mills felt God calling him to not give up, but to press on, as written in Philippians 4:13. This verse became a source of strength for Mills, from childhood sorrow through Olympic glory. In interviews, he also stressed the importance of humility and serving others, affirming the message of Micah 6:8. "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God." Mills' legacy is not just an Olympic record. It's the story of healing through faith, of broken wings restored, and of dreams awakened by God's promises. Through his life, he brings scripture to life as living testimony to hope, endurance, and love. And so this is one of the most famous calls ever.
Yeah.
It's
up there with Larry Munson.
It really is. It's up there.
Go Dogs.
Let's play that video of that last minute.
Here we go in the final lap for the gold medal in the 10,000 meters. And up front is Bill Mills. He's pressing Ron Clark, the world champion. Bill Mills in the United States, number 722, is leading Ron Clark. And in third place right now is Mahout Bagamoudi of Tunis. A tremendous upset if Bill Mills can hang on. But Gamoudi goes out ahead as Gamoudi right now leading in the 10,000 meter. Ron Clark is third. Rather, Bill Mills is in third. Ron Clark is in second right now. This is the final lap for the 10,000 meter. The unheralded Mahout Gamoudi of Tunis is putting on a tremendous sprint. He's out ahead of Ron Clark. Bill Mills, the United States, is in third place. This will certainly be the fastest 10,000 meter ever run by an American. Here they come down the final lap. Can Ron Clark catch Gamoudi? They're going through the field. He's coming up. He's passing Gamoudi.
Look at Mills. Look at Mills. Look at Mills.
Coming on. Mills is coming on.
Oh. No.
It might be Bill Mills. What a tremendous surprise here. Bill Mills in the United States wins the 10,000 meter. Bill Mills in the United States, a tremendous upset, wins the 10,000 meter here.
What a great call. I still get goosebumps every time I listen to that. And I've heard it. So, as a matter of fact, one of the podcasts I listen to has that particular call on the kind of the introduction of it. And every time I hear, look at Mills, I get goosebumps.
If that doesn't remind you of Hobnail Boot, Larry Munson talking about Herschel Walker, I mean, it sounds just like it. Yeah, I love the old style calling like that.
Getting excited because your team is doing well.
Yeah, I used to watch Georgia football. I'd watch it on the TV, and I would have the radio on so I could hear Munson call it.
Yeah,
that was always fun.
I've heard of a lot of people doing.
No, that was a cool man, and to think that that was almost a minute faster than his previous best, and he ran a 24-mile run 4 days before.
4 days before, yeah,
yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfathomable to think. And Ron Clark Gamoudi was one of the top in the world, but everybody knew Ron Clark was going to win that race.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, who was second right there?
It was Clark.
Yeah. I mean, he was floored when he looked. You could see even in the grainy video, he looked over and he was like, what? Are you kidding me?
Who is this? Yeah. Yeah. And like it said in the article, it's like, The reporters were like, who's the guy who won?
Yeah. But they didn't know who he was.
Yeah. It would be equivalent today to, you know, today there's a lot of guys that have run under 27 minutes. Their world record is 26:11. That's about 50 seconds. And so it would be like somebody today, there's dozens of guys who have run under 27 minutes now. And it would be like somebody who's never run under 27 minutes coming in and winning the Olympic gold.
It would be hard for you to name some of those guys right now.
Yeah.
Because they're just not talked about.
Right, right, exactly. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I like this because it's, to me, this is one of the greatest Olympic things. Maybe the miracle on ice, of course, was a big one.
Sure.
Do you believe in miracles? That's another call that when you hear it, you know, you get really excited about it. But I think that three of the top five Olympic moments in history are track and field related.
Yeah.
I think that's number two. I think number one is Bob Beamon. When Bob Beamon broke the world record in the long jump, that was incredible. And then, of course, Jesse Owens winning winning four events and kind of sticking it in Hitler's eye was great. So the question is, if it's Miracle on Ice and those three track ones, what's the fourth? What's the fifth one? If you add the top five, what would be the top five? Do you have one in mind? I say Kerry Strug. Do you remember that?
That in your note. I don't remember that. No.
Okay, Kerry Strug, she's a gymnast.
Yeah.
And she had sprained her ankle severely in her next to last event. And so Kerry Strug has to do the vault in her last event. And they really need her to stick this vault. And so this girl.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. For whatever reason, I thought that was Mary Lou Retton.
No, that was Carrie Strug.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's
and she lands and epic. She immediately pulls that foot up because it was so painful to her, but she did it.
Yeah.
And they won. And so I think I came up with some honorable mentions. Nadia Comaneci and her perfect 10 in gymnastics in 1976. I was sitting there. I know you weren't watching, but I was watching.
Wasn't watching then.
it would have been hard for you to have been watching. Mm-hmm. But I was watching that, and I remember we were floored by the fact that she scored a 10 because nobody had ever done that before. And then she had several other 10s. And then the first dream team in basketball in 1992 was a big one.
That was in my heyday.
Yeah, yeah. And then the Jamaican bobsled team of 1988. Oh, yeah. You gotta love that story for sure. Anyway, not a lot of people realize that Billy Mills was a Christian and that his Christianity drove him. There is a movie about Billy Mills' life, and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head right now. I can't believe that. Running Brave, it's called. And it's a dated movie, but it tells his story, but they don't really mention.
Have we ever reached out to him?
I did one time and then never followed up with him. We should
circle back to that.
Yeah.
Because that would be a really cool guest to have
on
this podcast.
He talked about how he had envisioned himself over and over and over winning that race. Mm-hmm. So imagine the audacity to say, I'm going to go in there and try to win this race. He wasn't even the number one runner for the United States, let alone the number one runner in the world. So he really had no business thinking that. But in his mind, he was winning that race over and over again in his head. And sure enough, it came to pass.
Really cool story.
Colossians 3:23-24. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. We see a lot of athletes these days who they do a good job of representing their faith and putting mm-hmm. themselves out there for it. And it's pretty cool to see that when you do see that. And I know the non-Christians sometimes don't like it, but the ones that are able to really connect everything together and you can see the authenticity of it, like when Tim Tebow was doing it. Tim Tebow was just authentic in what he was doing. And that was cool. But here's the question. For everybody out there, we all have a platform. Mm-hmm. This is our platform. But what's your platform? What are you doing? You may not be in front of millions of people like Billy Mills was. You may not be in front of the number of people that we are. But are you in front of a dozen people doing something where you're able to share your faith in some way that can be impactful to somebody around you? We all need to think about where that is and then take action.
Yeah, I think you said a word that we need to hear more often these days, because I think we were just talking about before the podcast about, understanding people, and you used the word authenticity. There's no sweeter aroma about a person than authenticity. Mm. I think there's a lot of people out there, and I'm not casting stones. Well, I guess I am, who do things for. You can just see it. You can take two people, and they're doing the exact same thing. And one you can see that it's authentic, and one that you can see that it's for show. And it can be the same message, but people today, their antenna, their radar is so keen on, they're not looking for what you say.
Yep.
They're the first thing they're looking for. The old saying used to be, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Right.
I think today there's even another layer on that. They want to know that you authentically care. We talk about the virtue signaling, that that has become a hot word over the past 5, 6, 7 years. And I think for good reason. I think when you talk about something, do it with conviction and authenticity. I mean, you and I get pretty raw on here sometimes, and I think that's needed. We don't, in the era of, I know I'm chasing rabbits here, in the era of social media and social media influencers and all that, people want somebody just to be real. They don't want to see the highlight videos.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear just about the good things, because day in and day out, we all go through struggles, and that is where you relate to people.
Yep.
In the struggles.
Yep.
Not in the triumphs.
Yep.
So I don't know why I'm saying that. Maybe I'm the one that needs to hear that. I don't know, but I think that's a real thing.
Yeah,
that we all need to understand.
There's a lot to it. There's a lot to that, and it's sort of like when you do your job at work, you want to do it to please your boss. Mm-hmm. You want to do what your boss wants you to do. That's an important thing, obviously, but it's more than that.
Sure.
Because when you do that, you're also pleasing God, because God wants you to be a good representation of Him.
Sure.
And you are when you're a hard worker and you do your job and you do the things you're supposed to do. And very often, I've seen a number of folks who they say a lot about their faith, but then in the background, they're not representing God as a good worker in whatever it is that they're doing, whether it's their job or something else. And that's not good.
No.
Because just to your point, then you're not being authentic. It's clear that you're not authentic. You're saying words, but you're doing something else. And so it's important that the things that we do every day represent who God wants us to be.
And again, we're not throwing stones here. Only be two people that need to hear what we're saying right now, and it may be me and you. But I mean, it is convicting when you really sit back and think on that and pray on that.
Yeah.
You know, Lord, am I being authentic in the things that I'm doing? And if we're not representing Him.
That's right.
Period.
Philippians 2:3-4, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of others. This is such a big issue today. You know, last week, Debbie and I, we were at Costco. And I don't know what was going on at Costco. I don't know why it was so busy, but there literally were no open parking places.
You used the word weekend. That was your problem.
Well, but we've been there, you know, 100 times on the weekend, and there's usually at least parking places far out from the building.
Yeah.
There were none. There were no parking places and people circling the parking lot. Anyway, there's somebody out there and they've pushed their buggy and they've got their buggy and it's right in the center of the aisle, first of all, the driving aisle.
Yeah.
They've got their car open and they're just taking their good old time. There's a guy on the other side of that aisle trying to pull out, but they can't pull out because their buggy is sitting right in the middle of the shopping cart, if you prefer, if you're asking what a buggy is. But they're, you know, they can't get out. It's just gridlock because this person is just not paying attention to anybody around them. They're in their own little world. And this person probably didn't mean anything bad by it. They didn't mean anything nefarious. I get it. And I've done similar things in my life where I realize, oh, gosh, I'm in the way, right? We've all done it. I'm not pointing out this person for that reason. I'm pointing out that in society these days, we're also focused on what we're doing, that we're not paying attention to what anybody else around us is doing and being accommodating to them for those things.
Or somebody in that story prayed for patience that morning.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be too, huh?
Stick that jab in there.
You know, there's another group that cyclists. You know when cyclists are running, they're running side by side on the road.
I know what you're talking about, Dean.
And you get behind them. What if somebody, like, they're trying to get to the hospital for an emergency, and these cyclists are just riding side by. There's nothing wrong with cyclists riding side by side, but if there's a car, then move over. Mm. And they don't do that. They act like, well,
I've got another take on that.
Yeah.
We can probably argue and fight about this all day long. But, you know, when we were coaching the triathlon team, you didn't do a whole lot with the cycling part. But now I get it. If it's two grown men riding down the road and it's obvious, they're just not going to They don't care that you're back there. That's one thing. But I used to tell the, I mean, Lane, many of these kids were out riding these roads all over the county at 12, 13 years old by themselves.
Yeah.
You know, by 12, 13, I couldn't keep up with them anymore, so we'd send them off. But I would always tell them, and just know this when you see a cyclist, the safest thing to do is to not get on the white line.
Yeah.
From a cyclist standpoint, because you don't, I've always said, you need to act like you're a car, and people need to pass you as if you're a car. They need to make a conscious decision. Okay, I'm going to have to get in the other lane to go around this person, because if you hug that white line, no matter what's coming ahead, the person behind you thinks they can squeeze by, and that's where it gets dangerous.
Yeah.
But now, to your point, I do know the guys because I've ridden with them before. It's like they'll go three wide, and they're not trying to be safe. It's just they're trying to be cocky and arrogant, and you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's a difference between those two things for sure. Yeah, and I take your point well, and that's just my point is if you're riding side by side with somebody,
your
and a car comes up
about
behind
others.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody comes up behind you, then just move over in front of the person that you're riding beside, and that gives them enough room. Now, if I'm going around a curve and there's a cyclist in front of me, and I can't get around because I'm going around a curve, I don't mind that at all.
Sure.
That doesn't bother me at all. It's when you can't get around them because
it's the age-old fight of runners and cyclists.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Psalm 37:5 says, commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will act. Now, this does not mean God does what you want him to do, but it does mean that when we do what he wants us to do and we're acting in his interest, then he's going to act in our best interest. And that's plain and simple and straightforward. And I like this. Commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will act.
Yeah, we so many times we don't read that and he will, or we only read that he will act.
Yeah.
The trust in the Lord is the most important part of this. I mean, think back to when you were a kid and you wanted to stick that paperclip in the light socket. And your dad said, no, it's if you trust in your dad or your mom, saying, no, don't do that, that will harm you, you could argue, well, I'm not getting what I want. But if there's the trust there, then you are going to get what you want.
Yeah.
You may not know it. And that's kind of how we are with God is, you know, the trust has to come first. And our heart will change when we trust something, and our motives will change, and therefore we will get what we want. But I wanted to point out these three verses. You know, we can get, not you and I as much, but we as a Christian community can get so bogged down into what's the word I'm using for? The philosophy and the doctrinal and the just all the minutiae of what Scripture says. Sometimes we just need to pick our head up and say, what are the three things I can take away from this? Well, these verses basically said, work hard, value other people, and trust in the Lord.
Pretty simple.
It's very simple.
But yeah.
Too many times we dive down deep and what does that really mean? Well, it means trust in the Lord because that's what it said. It means work hard because that's what it said, and value others because that's what it said. But we try to pull things apart and pull this string. We try to get the meaning we want out of it.
When
most of Scripture is pretty explicitly clear.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just need to pick our head up and say, what are the three things I need to hear from that?
Good point. I like it. Plain and simple. Where are the broken wings in your life that need healing? And what dreams might God be calling you to pursue? Of course, that's a good question for all of us. And you see so many people who get caught up into something that happened to them when they were younger. Mm-hmm. Somebody just doesn't, and they can't get over it. Mm-hmm. And those are broken wings. Mm-hmm. Those are things that, and God really wants to heal those wings.
Sure.
God wants to fix those wings. But the problem is, It doesn't happen on our terms. And that's where the disconnect is a lot of times for people who have broken wings that never seem to get healed. It's because they're not doing it on God's terms. They're wanting God to do it on their terms. And that's where we've heard a lot of testimonies from people who they're at their lowest moment mm-hmm. when God comes in and changes their life. That's where we got to get to. We got to get to that point where we can allow God to act and to change our lives.
Well, and it's going back to last week's podcast, because last week's podcast is still on my brain because Charlie also preached on it in church this Sunday, but the idea of despising the shame. You know, so many times we can't heal because of the shame that's there, and we want to keep it hidden and private. I actually told my story twice this week of, you know, where Holly and I almost financial calamity of the 08 housing market and how we just almost lost everything because of just some bad choices. And for so long, I didn't want to talk about that. I wanted to keep it secret because I was ashamed of it. And talking about it, I've talked about it for years now, but us having that discussion last week about what does it mean that Christ despised the shame and Paul despised the shame? It's taking the thing that we think is the worst thing in our life and using it as the best opportunity to share with others. And for this, I shared my story twice this past week, and I bet I hadn't shared it in 6 months. Huh. And I've done it twice this past week, and it's because I found myself sitting in front of people that needed to hear it. And going back to the beginning of this podcast, when you said stories, the people out there listening to this right now, I'm not saying send it in for us to talk about on the podcast, although that would be great. But if think of the thing in your life that you're just trying to push down and you're ashamed of it, you don't want to talk. I mean, we've had some pretty raw stories on here.
Yeah, we have.
And what it has done for other people is amazing. God will take the thing that you're the most ashamed of, that you feel like nobody wants to hear. Society says nobody wants to hear that. The evil one is saying you need to keep that to yourself. Why is the pressure to subdue that so strong? It's because it can be so powerful if you do share it. Now, again, I'm not asking you to send it. I mean, that's a process to get to where you send it into somebody like us. But if you're there and it's a story that you feel like somebody could use, send it in.
Yeah.
It's very, that is healing the broken wings. Yeah. Because oftentimes it's just sharing your story.
Just letting it out.
Something as simple as that. Because there's freedom in that.
Yep,
there's so much freedom in that.
For sure. Good point. How can faith, trusting in Christ's strength, help you persevere through trials and moments of feeling like an underdog? I think we have to realize that we're never alone. I know a lot of times we feel like we're alone, but we're never truly alone. And I always think about, when I think about if I'm feeling alone, I always think about the story of Elisha. You know, when the servant, when Elisha says to the servant, those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And the servant looks at Elisha like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So these armies out here and we're surrounded and we're done for.
Yeah.
And then Elisha prays to God for him to have to be able to open his eyes mm-hmm. and see the chariots of fire and the horses that are all surrounding them. And it's such a great picture, because so often when we're just at our lowest moment and we feel like God's not there, very often he's got chariots of fire there. All he wants us to do is believe they're there. Mm-hmm. Now, this particular servant got the opportunity to actually see them. But if we can just believe that they're there, it can be all the difference
in
everything.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Wouldn't it?
If we could see, we pray for things like hedge of protection and all that. What if we could actually see what God has around? And I think we get a glimpse into that, although we can't physically see it. But that's why we always talk about, you got to look back.
Yeah.
Look back at the last thing God brought you through. And many times you often chuckle about it. I mean, it's like, why was I so wound up about that? Why was I so stressed out about that? And I think even again, to the last point, many times when we're tied up in knots and we don't have faith and we're stressed out, the best thing you can do is talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what do? I actually just got a text this morning from somebody saying that they're not going to make an event because they're just stressed out about some things. And I thought to myself, that's the wrong answer. If you're that, you need people around you who love you, and you need to put yourself out there so that people can help. But we run to our corner, yeah, and we think that's the safe place, but that is where the enemy will attack you the hardest,
yeah,
is when you feel alone. Even though, just to your point earlier, we're never alone.
Well, in that case, you're probably pulling away from those chariots of fire.
Exactly.
Right? You were in that area, in that arena with those chariots of fire around you, and you decided to withdraw from that.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's
when you need to lean in.
That's right.
Let people help.
Yeah. In what ways can your victories, large or small, be used to serve and inspire others for God's glory? It's easy to look at Billy Mills' story and think, well, I'm not going to win an Olympic medal, and this kind of thing doesn't apply to me. But there's a lot of other smaller victories. You yourself have been through cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That was a victory. Mm-hmm. That's a huge victory. And that can be your story. You just mentioned another story, another mm-hmm. victory that you have had. And maybe it's even smaller than that. Maybe you were at a kid's sports banquet or something and you have this opportunity to speak or whatever it might be. I'll tell you something that happened to me this past week. So there's a particular running group, a site out there that I signed up for their, what they call their supporters club. If you know that term, you probably know what it is. Anyway, I signed up for it, and you're supposed to get a free t-shirt when you sign up for this thing. Well, I didn't get my t-shirt. It didn't even ask me about my t-shirt size. And so I sent them an email and I said, I thought I was supposed to get a free t-shirt if I signed up for a year, and I didn't see anywhere to enter the t-shirt. Well, 3 weeks later, I finally got a response from them, and it was one of the guys that's on this podcast, one of the brothers that's on this podcast. And he says, did you not get an email? And I was like, I didn't even know I was supposed to get an email, but I didn't get an email. And so he said, I'll resend you the link. So he resent me the link. So problem solved, except that he then said, I said, I'm looking forward to advertising for you. He said, what do you mean by that? And I told him that, you know, just wearing the shirt out in public would advertise for them. And I went on and proceeded to tell him a little bit more about who I was. And then I said, by the way, I really enjoy what you guys do. I said, just every once in a while, you guys get a little bit too woke for me. For example, and I said, there is no such thing as referring to a single person as they. And I don't know how anybody else that feel. I hope I'm not stepping on any toes out there, anybody listening to this, but that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And that's all I said. And I moved on to the next thing. And that's all I said. This week's podcast from that guy that I sent that message to, when he used that term, he used it in a very derisive way, almost like, well, I'm going to say this, but I feel like I'm forced to say it. And he's never done that before. He's always used that term normally. But for whatever reason, this week,
he made a good impact.
And that's my point. My point through this story is that, you know, here's a podcast that many thousands of people listen to every week.
Sure.
And I just sent the guy an email and made a comment that was not ugly. It was just, here's what I think. And it made him think, clearly made him think. I'm sure that was on his mind when he did that and said that. And those are the kind of little tiny ways that we can impact the people around us just by doing and saying things that are just honest and true and biblical.
Well, and I haven't read the message, but you did it in the right way. You did it in love, and I'm going to say love loosely because you weren't like lovey-dovey to the guy, but you started with, I really enjoy what you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think we fall flat so many times is we just go on launch the attack. I know I've done that. I know you've done that. You're the email king.
Yep.
But yeah, if we just kind of change, my wife is incredible, and she's about, she, her and Debbie is the same way. They're mm-hmm. such, they don't say a lot, but when they say something, you need to listen.
Mm-hmm.
She often says, it's not what you say.
It's how you say it.
It's how you say it. I'm mm-hmm. sure you've heard that same thing.
So many times.
And I think that is where we fall flat many times. I feel like what you and I say, I mean, I'm an expert on my opinion. But that's right. I feel like what we say most often is right. I think what I know what I can work on many times is how I say it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very good example. If you would have just launched into that guy.
Yeah.
You would have probably heard him overemphasize the word on the podcast yes. the next time.
Right.
Just to get back at you. But you did it the right way. You did it the way Christ would do it. And you did it out of love. And you audibly heard a difference the next time you used that word. Now, maybe he'll get to where he don't do that anymore. But that's the kind of effect we can have on people when we do it out of love. But when we do it out of Mitchell and Dean, man, it usually goes the wrong way.
That's right. Yeah. Good point.
Good story, Dean.
Upward running is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness and faith journeys. You get these weekly podcasts, but there's so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there too. If you're not a member, join today at upwardrunning.com. It is the best value you'll find to fuel both your faith and your fitness.
Well, how about this story from Study Finds? How much protein do you really need? Too much or too little can be harmful.
The title itself, too much or too little can be harmful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of stating the obvious there. Yeah. That's studies these days for you.
I'm telling you. Does anyone else think we've all become a bit too protein obsessed? Once upon a time, we got our protein from meat, fish, and dairy. Now it seems like every consumable product comes loaded with it, from energy bars to protein-packed cereals and baked goods. I'm surprised no one's thought of stirring it into their tea for a boost. Oh, wait, they have. That's not to say I'm anti-protein, far from it. Protein plays an essential role in body functions such as growth, immunity, and digestion. It's important that we get enough of it each day. But the million-dollar question we should be asking are, how much do we actually need? When is it too much or too little? And where should we be getting it from? And it goes on, it talks about protein being a macronutrient along with carbohydrates and fats. It's protein is involved in a huge range of physiological processes. It's crucial for muscle growth and repair. But protein isn't just about muscles. It's core structural material for bone, skin, hair, and nails too. So obviously protein is important. We know that. Mm. But remember, protein doesn't work in isolation. Our bodies also rely on carbohydrates and fats, providing short and long-term energy sources that are just as important. Carbohydrates provide 4 calories of energy per gram, and fats provide 9 calories per gram. While protein can also be used as an energy source, also producing 4 calories per gram, carbs are more accessible for tissues to use rapidly. And crucially, building muscle also requires fuel. So if your diet is too low in carbohydrates, your muscle gains may stall and you may find yourself depleted of energy. In general, protein is filling and can help reduce snacking. And too little protein can be harmful. Protein deficiency can occur due to inadequate diet and can lead to all sorts of things. But how much should you have? Good rule of thumb is this. If you are a sedentary person, about 0.5 gram per body weight seems to be about right per pound. If you're an athlete, maybe about gram per pound of body weight. Somewhere in that range is about where we should all be. So that gives you a good rule of thumb to look at it.
There is one thing in here I took issue with, and maybe it's just my opinion. It said protein will help reduce snacking. I don't buy that because I think snacking is habitual. It's a habit to break. You can be full and have all the protein in the world, and if you're a snacker, you're a snacker.
That's a fact.
I mean, if those chips come out on the counter in the evenings when we're cooking dinner with chips and salsa, I'll eat the whole bag.
Yeah.
And I've had plenty of protein.
Yeah, that's true.
It's habitual, I think.
That's a good point.
But I think at the end of the day, it's kind of like shoes. It's you got to find what works for you. You know, I've been on this journey that I'm still not talking a whole lot about yet, but what I found was I went too far one way. It's the devil's in the extremes.
Yep.
You go one way or the other, and it's why I don't like elimination diets. I think you need it all. But I went too far in the way of not enough protein, and I borderline lost too much weight.
Mm-hmm.
It was too much.
Yeah.
And so now I've added some protein back. I'm kind of changed things up, and I've kind of stabilized and even put a few pounds back on. But you got to find what works for you. It's not a one size fits all, which when you make statements like, well, you need 1 gram of protein per body weight. Well, that can be a lot for some people.
Yeah.
So I think it's what you and I always say, the awareness.
Yeah.
Is understand what it's doing. I have been keenly aware of what it was doing to me, and I saw, oh, this is going too far. But so many of us will take one of these studies, which I feel like this study did not tell us anything when you get done reading it. But we'll take a study like 1 gram of protein and we'll stick our head in the stand, 1 gram of protein per body weight, and we'll go to do it, and it'll cause things we don't want. So you understand the cause and effect. We've said that a lot.
Well, it goes on to talk about some of the things that can be caused by too much protein,
right,
and too little protein. And that's kind of the key. And here's a good example. You know, at one time I was anemic. Mm-hmm. My iron count was low. And so I've been taking iron for a few years. Mm-hmm. And because I thought, well, if my body has the ability to go low on iron, that probably means I'm not going to store too much iron and it become toxic to me. Sure enough, I get all these tests run and my hemoglobin level is fine. It's right in the middle of the range where it should be and all that's great. But your ferritin level is supposed to be somewhere around, I don't know, between 50 and 100 or so. That's a normal, good, healthy ferritin level. Mine was 481.
Yeah.
I have too much.
I'd never heard of a ferritin that high.
I never had either. But I have too much iron in my body. My iron percentage is too high. Mm-hmm. And what's funny is I've been writing in my journal this entire year. My legs feel weak. Mm-hmm. They feel weak. And I've written that I don't know how many times. Well, it turns out, guess what causes weak feeling in mm-hmm. your legs? Too much iron.
Or too little iron.
Or too little iron.
It's finding that sweet spot.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so I guess the reason I bring it up is because you have to have it. You need it measured. You need to measure these things.
Yeah.
You need to get those checkups and have these things measured.
And that helps you understand the cause and effect.
That's right.
You know, because, yeah.
Yep.
Won't beat that dead horse anymore.
Moderation. It's time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Have you ever had to just get through something? So you prepared yourself to be really strong for that amount of time. What happens when that time goes longer than you expected? This is called strength should not be temporary. A few years ago, I ordered a new GPS watch to be delivered just before I left to run an out-of-town marathon. I was excited to have my new watch for race day, but it was not to be. Something happened in the shipping of said watch, and I did not receive it in time. It was a real letdown when you anticipate something and it doesn't happen. How about when you're going through something tough and you steel yourself against the pain only to find out it doesn't stop. For example, many years ago when my son was very young, we were running a 5K and I was pushing him pretty hard throughout the race. I kept telling him how close the finish line was so that he understood just how long he had to endure the discomfort. I saw the finish line ahead and told him how close it was. He picked it up another notch, excited to be finished. As we approached the finish line, something didn't look right. And then I found out why. We had to run past the finish line for a few hundred yards, make a U-turn, and come back to the finish. He still had a few minutes left to run, even as he was kicking to the finish line. Needless to say, it was difficult for him to keep running. When we have something going on in our lives that is temporary, we usually prepare ourselves for the amount of time it will take to endure that thing. We prepare our mind, for example, for when we get a diagnosis of tendonitis in the knee. The doctor explains that it usually takes 4 to 6 weeks to get over it. So, for the next 4 to 6 weeks, we get mentally tough, knowing the end is coming soon. But what happens when, at the end of 6 weeks, we're not well? Or maybe worse, you get over it and then 6 weeks later it comes back. What a tough mental wall that can be. And it isn't hard to imagine many personal issues that are far worse than a race or a little tendonitis. How about cancer, for example? But it doesn't have to be that way. We don't have to put temporary limits on our thoughts. We don't have to expect the end to come at any particular time. As a matter of fact, if we're living in God's will for our lives, He tells us that there is a purpose for everything. For example, my son ran a big PR the day I messed up his finish, partly because I messed up his finish. Maybe there's a reason that you can't see for the cancer coming back. It sounds harsh, but I have certainly heard good stories from bad circumstances. We can all understand why the disciples were heartbroken over the death of Jesus. What could have been more devastating in that moment? But look what came from that. Back to my GPS watch. Eventually, I got a message from Amazon apologizing for the mix-up in shipping, and they offered me a substantial discount on a replacement. In the end, I saved around 75% off the original list price of the watch. Did I like having to wait the extra couple of weeks? No. But was I glad I had to wait those extra couple of weeks? Yes. Pain in all its many forms can be temporary, or it can be continuous, or it can go away and come back. Don't program yourself to be strong temporarily. Through God, we can be strong all the time.
That's a great story, Dean. There's nothing worse than expecting something to come in on a certain day for an event and it not coming in.
Yeah.
That will make you do, I mean, it's made me almost willing to drive to wherever it is.
to pick it up.
Pick it up, yeah. And isn't that so telling of where we are in society today?
It really is.
Long are gone the days of the mail order catalogs. I remember when I was a kid, getting that Sears catalog, filling it out, sending it in. And
you had no idea how long it was going
to
be.
6 to 8 weeks later, the thing comes in.
Now we get notifications on when it's supposed to be there.
Sure.
And, you know, back then you had no idea.
Yeah. And you can get it same day, even here.
Yeah.
You can get something same day if it's coming out of the Amazon in Chattanooga.
Is that right?
Crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I had never thought before about how we brace ourselves for how long we think the pain is going to last. I never really thought about that. You know, several months ago, I ran this relay race. Mm-hmm. And I had an 8.8 mile leg on this relay race, the first 8 miles of which were downhill, almost exclusively downhill for 8 miles. And then I just had that little last less than a mile uphill, except the uphill was substantial. It was pretty steep and it was going to be hard. But I thought, all I've got to do is I'm going to just relax down that hill and I'll probably run fast, even though I'm nice and relaxed. And when that hill comes up, no problem. I can handle what, 6 or 7 minutes worth of just hammering my body into the ground I'll be done. I'll be mm-hmm. done at the end of that. And so I thought, no big deal. The problem was I hadn't seen the course ahead of time. And at 0.8 mile, I began to believe in my mind that they lied to me, that it was more than 0.8 miles. And then all of a sudden I turned a corner and boom, the finish line was there. But I had slowed down slightly because in my mind, I didn't know when the finish line was coming. And I think we do that with a lot of things where We get ready and we think we know what we're going to experience, but then when we don't experience what we think we're going to experience, everything goes haywire.
Oh, I did that yesterday. You know, it's been raining here so much.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to do a ruck yesterday, so I went upstairs and got on the treadmill. I never used the treadmill here. Holly uses it quite a bit. And I sat it on the pace that I normally ruck, and I got 2.5 miles in, and I was like, golly, bum, I must not be recovered. This is hard. Then I realized the treadmill's set on an incline. Had no idea. Holly walks with the treadmill on an incline, and I think it was 2 or 3%, which is not a lot, but over 2.5 miles with 55 pounds in your back, it was like, this is harder than it should be. And so if you...
That's funny. Well, we've probably all known somebody who had cancer that went into remission and then came back later.
Yeah, that's tough.
And usually when that happens, one of two things happens. They either think, we've beaten it once, we'll beat it again. Or they go, I just don't have the energy to go through this again.
I've got a friend right now who this is his third time. And
wow.
He's refused treatments this time.
Wow.
And man, that's a tough one. He's got two kids. His wife just recently, in the past few years, died of cancer. Mm. And I struggle with what to think about that. And I've come to the conclusion I respect his decision. I don't think I would make that the same decision, but that doesn't make his decision wrong.
Yeah.
I'm really torn about the thought of that. But yeah, I mean, I get it. I went through cancer, but mine was fairly easy, if there is such a thing. But yeah, I mean, I've known several people that just like it comes back and it comes back and it comes back. And I think I could see getting to the point where you say, you know, Lord, just this is your will, take me on.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. That would be hard.
It would.
And I just think we have to lean on Romans 8:28.
Sure.
You know, and we know in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. We're focused on what he's got us to do. I just, it's easier said than done for sure, especially for a guy who's faced with mortality mm-hmm. for the third time. I can't imagine going through that.
Yeah. But it's also brought him closer to Christ.
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
It's as hard as it is to say, it's worked for the good.
Yeah. I often think about Abraham and Isaac. You know, the Bible tells us that was a 3-day journey.
Sure.
And to believe in your mind, not knowing what God was going to do. He had no idea what God was going to do in that time. But God's asking him to sacrifice this son that he's waited 100 years for. Mm-hmm. And he's asking him to sacrifice him. And the faith that it had to take for Abraham to do what he did, all the way into the point that he did it, just had to be heart-wrenching. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine going through that. But he knew in his mind, Hebrews seems to indicate that maybe he may have believed that, well, if he did sacrifice Isaac, that God would just bring him back to life, because God can do anything. And he mm-hmm. believed that. And that's where our faith has to be. We have to believe sure. God can do whatever it is that needs to be done for us to do whatever it is that he wants us to do, right? Yeah.
At Upward Sports, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey, but we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. You can sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you helpful tips of the day and finish with an encouraging quote in each episode. You must be an Upward Running member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week, we share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. This week, it means you need more carbohydrates. And let's face it, those carbs that we need for energy, most of the time, the good foods are carbs. The stuff that tastes good are carbs. So the more energy you expend, the more you need. And let's face it, carbs is where you get a good portion of that energy. So if you do a lot of exercise, now you don't want it in pure sugar form, but you need some carbs. So, yeah. And, you know, I don't know why this hit me this week. I've already said something political. I'm going to do it again, I guess. But, you know, there's been this argument over people using these EBT cards, the food stamp type mm-hmm. stuff, for stuff like sugary drinks. And I'm like, I don't understand why that's a thing.
Yeah.
And I guess the reason why, I guess, I remember when I quit, I was drinking Diet Coke like it was water.
You kept a case in your back seat usually.
Yeah, I had Diet Coke. I mean, I literally went through, I don't know, close to a 12-pack a day. I mean, I drank a lot of Diet Coke, and I just quit all of a sudden. Well, guess what happened? I started saving money.
Yeah.
Water's free right out of the tap. Yeah. It's free. And so this idea that people who are struggling to make ends meet, buy some good food that's really good for you mm-hmm. and save that money and drink water. I don't know. I don't get the mentality where you wouldn't do that, but
well, and the whole notion that it's more expensive to eat healthy is just false.
Yeah.
It's just false. I go once a week to the little fruit stand between Farnell and Cahuta. I think I told you about
it. Yep.
And Dean, I spend $20 a week there.
Yeah.
And I load up, and usually at the end of the week, we're having to throw stuff away.
Yeah.
And I eat a ton of fruits and vegetables now, and I do it for $20 a week. And I mean, it's now to buy a healthy package. That's an oxymoron, isn't it? There are ways, if you go to, you know, certain restaurants that are only healthy, but to cook healthy, to chop up squash and zucchini. I made you one of my lunches here while back.
Yep.
I can take a squash, a zucchini, an onion, a jalapeno, a pack of mushrooms, mm-hmm. one little can of curry paste, and that's probably like $5 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's two lunches for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's great. It tastes good.
Yeah, it's good. For sure.
So, yeah, I don't agree with the soft drinks on the EBT. I understand EBT. I don't have a problem with safety nets, society's safety nets, but I think they're just being abused now.
Yeah.
And it's not, I stepped into territory here that can be polarizing. It's not the fault. The big food is the one that blame here. They push and they lobby to get these things approved. Because think about it, if you get something approved to be used for food stamps in the big food world, it's the equivalent in big pharma of getting something on the vaccine list.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's millions of people.
Yeah.
And so the soft drink manufacturers, it wasn't that some congressman said, oh, I think we need Coke to be on the food stamp list.
That is
it
true.
Was the big food saying that needs to be on there. Yeah, it's nefarious. It is.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Well, we're seeing some interesting things from triathletes these days. I don't know if you've paid attention to all this. Yeah. I know you've been a big triathlon guy, but you know, first we had Morgan Pearson, who ran 61:01 for a half marathon, which is crazy fast, especially for an American. Then Hayden Wild ran a 27:39 for a 10K, which was pretty fast. And then just recently, last week, Alex Yee, the Olympic champion in triathlon, ran 13:13.
And he's not
for a 5K
young guy. I mean, he's been around a while.
Yeah.
In the triathlon world. So, yeah, he's always been wicked fast.
Yeah, yeah. All these guys, I guess, came through the triathlon system around the same time. Mm-hmm. They're pretty close in age, aren't they, all of these guys?
Yeah. I would say Alex, she's the oldest of them.
Is he?
Yeah, I think.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah.
But, you know, all of these performances are not very far off world class. So the question becomes, Would they run faster if they focused on just running?
I guess you can't emphatically say yes, and you can't emphatically say no.
Correct.
Because I think, to the point of what we've seen in years past, triathlon enhances running for some people, and running 80 miles a week enhances running for other people.
Yeah.
Again, it's very individual.
Yeah. I used to think this is obvious. Yeah. Of course, if they focused on running, they would be faster runners. I don't think that anymore.
Right.
And the only thing that we don't know about an Alex Yee is what would have happened had he never been in triathlon and he just focused on running. Would he be faster then? Possibly. But at this point in his life, he's not going to be faster focused on running. We just saw it with on the female side when Gwen Jorgensen decided to go and be a runner. She was by far the best runner in the world on the triathlon scene. She was running near world-class times in the triathlon.
And I don't think she really got much faster than that.
Not
if
much.
If anything, she, in the latter part, she started to go downhill. The
point is, I think a lot of these guys, they have trained a certain way. Their body is used to a certain stimulus. Mm-hmm. And sometimes changing that stimulus is more negative than positive. And I think they need that they need that cycling and they need that swimming to enhance their running.
Sure.
And that's just the way it is. And so if you're one of those who thinks, man, what would happen if Alex Yee, who just ran 13:13 for 5,000 meters, what would happen if he really focused on running? What would happen is Alex Yee would run 13:13 for 5,000 meters if he really focused on running, probably.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. It's interesting. It's always fun to bat that one around.
Yeah.
Our trivia question for this week. We would all guess that Kenya and Ethiopia would have the most elite marathoners, and we would be correct. They are 1 and 2. But which country produces the third highest number of elite marathoners? And if you know the answer to that, send it to dean@upward.org. Be the first member to send that in, and you will win $20 off in the store. Incidentally, I just recently found an email from somebody. If you've ever sent an email in and answered one of these questions, and I never responded to you, I respond to anybody who sends in an answer. Mm-hmm. If I didn't respond to you, that means for some reason I didn't see it. And so recently I found one that had been sitting there for over 3 weeks.
Really?
It was in my spam folder. And I hardly ever check that.
Yeah.
And I checked it and I saw that when I felt so bad. And so if you don't hear back from me within a week or so of you sending that in, that means I probably didn't see it. Mm. And I don't know if you should send another or find a way to contact me, because I would feel bad if I miss you.
So. Well, our Upward email system, if you're like sending from a company, like your company email, sometimes it'll get caught in our email spam and all that kind of stuff. So
it's a strange system, the way that it works. And sometimes it's hard. There's like 4 different places an email could wind up.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard to keep up with what's what. So
I'm dealing with Les right now. I don't even get our own newsletter.
There's a lot of stuff that comes directly from Upward that goes to a different folder for me too. It's like, why in the world?
A dark hole or something. Yeah. Black hole.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I'm sure they're being safe. That's probably the reason
why. For sure.
Yep. Our motivational thought of the week comes from Amby Burfoot. He said, "A good laugh and a long run are the two best cures for anything." I like that.
Sounds like a Jerry Snyder quote.
It does, doesn't it? Incidentally, next week, new Jerry Snyder.
Yeah, I saw another one come in from him. He's Mr. Consistent.
Yes, he is. Sure. Yes, he is. This is great, especially for stress-related things.
Yeah.
A good laugh and a long run really can help you with some stress. At least that's always been the way it's been for me. So,
for sure.
Totally agree with Amby's assessment there. Hey, if you're not part of Run Club, join Run Club. Go to upwardrunning.com. Learn more about who we are. Make sure that you're sharing this podcast with others so that they
can get... Couch to Marathon. Got and the next month.
That's right.
End of September.
Yeah. Yeah. So sign up. It'll be fun. And listen, if you are already a runner and you know you're running 5Ks, maybe some 10Ks, you can still sign up for the Couch to the Marathon. And you can just kind of put yourself in a holding pattern until we get to maybe the half marathon training. And then you can pick up the training from there. And don't think you're precluded just because you're not on the couch.
Right.
Because we'd love to have you as well. All right. That's it for this week. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.